years, I've stopped dreaming for myself.
Wait, like real dreaming when you sleep or like having visions and goals?
Goals, aspirations, inspiration, like they just fucking died. Envision a rubber ducky in a small pond. And it's like just waiting for the wind to blow. But like you're not really going anywhere. You're not really creating anything. Way back, because my grandfather had an insane life. Like there's stories he would tell about banditos and like how he would tell these like banditos on horses that his uncles went on a different street and like all this stuff, like crazy stories. We didn't all grow up with enough, even though they tried their best. Like my parents tried their best and it still wasn't enough. And I was like, rent to own. The only time I've ever seen like rent to own was my dad buying these like shitty houses as rent to own so we could have eventually like more property. And people responded, they're like, oh, I'd be so excited for them. And I'm like, you're all fucking liars. But then some people got really honest and they were like, immediate pangs of jealousy, immediate pangs of like, I don't know if it's that if that's possible for them or me.
And before we jump into the official episode today at Fearless Wealth, I just want to point out this is hashtag Team No Delusion. So everything you'll see, intro, mid-tro, intro, recording, everything is raw footage, one take. I will not be doing or redoing or participating in the whole Hollywood thing where everything needs to look polished or fake or perfect, because that's just not real life. So with that being said, welcome into the real world. And now we're jumping into the episode.
You want to talk about, let's talk about your life adventures right now.
Oh shit, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Go.
Life is fucking weird right now. So where to begin? So a couple weeks ago.
Hey everyone, this is Fearless Wealth here with Stefania and your favorite opinionated legendary Amerislav. Yes. So Stefania is going through like adventures.
I don't even know if I'd call them adventures at this point. I think it's just like the fuckery of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me take you back a couple weeks ago. I was walking Roxy, my dog, and I just got this hit that like, I think over the last handful of years, I've stopped dreaming for myself.
Wait, like real dreaming when you sleep or like having visions and goals?
Goals, aspirations, inspiration, like they just fucking died.
Okay.
And part of that was like, I was kind of going on this road of go where life takes me. But that also meant that like you're floating down a stream that's kind of slow and still. You're not swimming in the stream. If that makes sense. So I was walking Roxy and I just started thinking about it. And I was like, I got to start reconnecting to what desires I have. Because when I would look around at other people, I would be like almost revolted at what other people had. And I'd be like, I don't want that. Whatever that is, I don't want it. But if you tell the universe that you don't want something left, right, and center, it's not going to know what you do want to be able to deliver it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
And so I was walking with her and I was like, I think not being connected to an aspirational goal or a desire or a direction and just kind of letting life give me cool experiences. Don't get me wrong. Like I've created a six-figure business. I work maybe 20 hours a month. Like I have this really cool lucrative life. And at the same time, there's this way where it's not really full of vitality, so to say. And so I was like,
Would you call it stagnant or would you call it like, because your new baseline has created, but you didn't have, like you didn't, there's, it's a new norm, right? Like it became the new norm. And there's kind of.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, it was the new normal for sure, but it was also like, it felt directionless. So the best way to explain it is like, envision a rubber ducky in a small pond. And it's like just waiting for the wind to blow. But like, you're not really going anywhere. You're not really creating anything. And I've been in this spot several times in my life where I'm like, oh shit, I could die here.
Oh my God, you were in your rubber ducky face.
I was in my rubber ducky face.
Damn.
And I was like, don't get me wrong, Rubber Ducky Phase certainly has its like time and place.
Sure.
But if you're there for a while, it's like, what else do you expect to happen?
Right.
Right.
Well, so, nothing kind of happens.
Exactly. Like you're not okay.
Making anything happen. But yeah.
Well, exactly. Right. Like life's okay. Life is right. Content. And here's the thing, I would be fully honest. The word content actually holds some like wiring in my system that I never want. Contentment in my family line has meant still sacrifice and struggle.
Wait, say more. Say more about that word.
So like when my parents separated, my mom even said she was so surprised because she was content.
Okay.
And it was like, there's nothing wrong with the life, but there's nothing on about it either.
Right. So in the hierarchy of vocabulary, content for me is the level under happy. Happy has a heavier, bigger, and happy's under bliss, by the way, right? So it's a bliss, happy, content. It's kind of like a mellow version. That's how I translated.
That's the appropriate translation for sure. Okay. In my system, contentment is like, it's the rubber ducky.
You were rubber ducking.
Yeah. And so like I'd wake up, go get my latte. I'd serve my clients. I'd walk my dog. Like, and I could do that forever. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But like not dating, not going out with friends, basically doing like personal development and spiritual growth. And then my business, that was my life day in, day out, day in, day out. And I was like, that can't be it. And I don't know if you were, I don't know if the song was big in Europe, but there was a song back in like early 2000s.
Chasing every temporary high to satisfy me.
The exact song. Yeah. So like, that's kind of the song that like shakes me sometimes. Stacey Oracio, I think her name is. But it was like, fuck, like I could do this for the rest of my life and it would be fine.
Oh, so when you say it would be fine, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it would be fine. It would be okay. It would be content. And the last time I had experienced this feeling was back in like 2015. I was working for an auto group and I basically maxed out on the number of promotions I could get in the company. Uh-huh. And so it sat in this point, there was like me and then my friend Nancy, and then there was like Katie and then Chris. Chris was the controller, Katie was assistant controller, Nancy was the office manager, then it was me. And so I had gone to like my controller and at some point she was like, listen, Steph, like, I just don't think I have enough for you to be challenged by. I don't know if you can actually be happy here.
Yeah.
And so I looked at her in deadpan and I was like, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. And I want to say like having that kind of conversation with your boss is magical. Not everyone gets that opportunity. So I recognize like the tremendous mm-hmm. privilege of that connection with her mm-hmm. because I ended up saying, you're going to replace me. I'm going to train my replacement and I'm going to figure it out. Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
And it was really beautiful. It was a great transition. But the reason why I needed to acknowledge that transition was because even if I went to the different dealerships in the auto group, I had to wait for someone to retire. Like, that's where I was.
Yeah.
And the thing
that's the ducky. You're waiting for someone to retire, which would be a wind. So kind of like a swoop.
Exactly. And the thing about this company was that they're such a family, tight-knit family company that most of the people work there for decades. So like, you know, my friend Nancy had worked there for half of her life. She started at 17 and she was in her 30s. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there was Sharon who worked at another dealership and she had been there for 20 years. And then Fred in the auto group, like kind of head of tech, he had been there for 50 years. And so it was this reality that like people who worked at this company worked there for fucking ever. And it was beautiful that way. Yeah. And then at the same time, I was like, fuck, I'm already there.
Yeah.
Like I'm already at the spot where like this could be my next 50 years. And am I happy with that?
Yeah.
And so when I felt that same sensation come in, I'm like, oh, something needs to change. Like something needs to shift. And so as I'm on my walk with Roxy, I was listening to this podcast and it was from Andrea Crowder. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she was talking about this concept of like, if you and your family are walking down a street and there's an earthquake and the road splits between you, you're going to find a way to cross that split. And you're not just going to run haphazardly at it. You're going to be like, okay, what I am committed to, what I value, what is important to me, what's significant to me is over there. So what do I have over here that can get me over there? Mm-hmm. And as I was listening to it, I was like, oh, I can feel that I'm on one side of the chasm and I'm totally unaware of what's on the other side. Because I've been that disconnected from what's important to me, because I've just been kind of looking around at everyone else and being like, I don't want that, don't want that, don't want that, don't want that. Mm-hmm. So of course, I'm not going to know what's on the other side of my chasm to like move forward on, mm-hmm. because it's, I don't see anything that's interesting or appealing enough to create the bridge. Mm-hmm. So that's how you get stuck in the fucking ducky.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I love your ducky analogy, by the way. Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
No, go. Hey, whatever, man. So I just started thinking about it and I was like, okay, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't gripping for it or like trying to figure it out. I was like, I just want something to work towards. I want something that's got me excited. I want something that's got me lit up, because I haven't really been lit up in a very long time. Like, I mean, down to the point of like, I didn't even self-pleasure for like a handful of years, because also coming from like sexual spirituality path, anything to do with my sexual essence was tied to my growth. Mm-hmm. And so like, it wasn't even just pleasure for pleasure's sake. So I literally cannot tell you in the last handful of years where there was genuine pleasure in my life, mm-hmm. just pleasure for pleasure's sake, joy mm-hmm. for joy's sake. Mm-hmm. And it was like always edging up on like, oh, here's a new thing to make it through. And I was like, I don't want that. I actually want my life to feel like it's rolling, like it's going somewhere. Even if I don't know the objective destination, that I can feel it moving.
I'm gonna use you as a psychologist. I'm gonna use you now as a reflection board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I love how you word this. So my first ducky moment was when I retired 4 years ago. I was like, well, okay, this is great. You know, I was supposed to be dead at like 19. And now not only did I make it past that, now I'm retired at age 30. Like, what am I doing with life? We called it the Capricorn depression, because Capricorns are not supposed to like be there. I'm like, okay, now what? And then my second moment of duckiness came after, because I was chasing a big financial goal that would come with, like, I wanted to buy this new big mansion, 2.5 mil in Arizona. And then I got into ranch life and hunting, and I came kind of like full cycle back to my redneck life. And I'm like, who the fuck cares about this? I didn't want to be redneck. But then you're like, and then I was like, okay, but if I'm not chasing the big mansion, sure, I can chase big land, but that's not even the same realm. Because I can buy 10 big lands for the price that I buy the big mansion at. So that doesn't feel like a stretch. So I'm kind of duckying too. And then, so how did you deal with it? Walk us through it.
So basically, I was just fucking around a lot. I was like, okay, hold on. If I was going to be just real cunty about my existence and say, this is my life, and at the end of it, it's just me in the box. Mm-hmm. How would I want my story to go? Which is actually a really important question, because I've literally asked this my entire life. Was like, or I didn't ask this. I had a declaration in my like early 20s of like, I want a life that has an autobiography that's worth reading.
I love that. Did you happen to hear Hormozy speak about this?
This was something that came up between me and my relationship with my nonno, my grandfather, my mom's side.
Also, like, because
way back, because my grandfather had an insane life. Like, there's stories he would tell about banditos, and like how he would tell these like banditos on horses that his uncles went on a different street, and like all this stuff, like crazy stories, how he was he was asked to go to Rome to be an actor, and how his grandmother told or his mother told him no, and how he was going to go to Venezuela, and then his whole family basically forbid him from doing it. How he had a child in Germany in between my mom and her brother, like just this crazy
as one does,
as one does, right? It has this crazy story. And one, like, my grandfather, deeply imperfect, but like he was the first man who, like, I could love you at every level of imperfection. And he was the one who had my back. If anything, he was the one thing that kept me tethered to desire my whole life. Because, like, I didn't grow up with money. And we said this on the last podcast, but like, I started realizing that even growing up, because we didn't have money, I stopped wanting for things. Like, there's only so many times you can say, hey, can I have this? And your parents say, not right now, Steph. Sure. Where you're like, I'm just not going to ask anymore, because I know that even though it's not right now, it's going to put them into some sort of pressure or angst about even providing it.
Yeah.
And like, you don't want, like, if you're a compassionate kid, you don't want your parents to have to go through that. So yeah. I stopped wanting for things to the point where, like, I would go on vacation with my grandparents and my mom would be like, oh, watch out for Steph at Costco. She'll ask for the world. And then my grandfather would come home, call my mom and be like, she doesn't ask for anything. Like, oof, at all. And so I kind of started hindering my own desire, because it was like, if I ask, I'm always asking for too much, because my family just didn't have enough. And this is where, like, when I work with clients around, like, their familial stuff, it's like just the ownership and the acceptance that, like, we didn't all grow up with enough, even though they tried their best. Like, my parents tried their best and it still wasn't enough.
Sure.
Without it being
a blame, right? Like, they didn't give me, it's just like, this is how it was.
It's just true, you know? And it's like, they gave me the maximum that they could by all means. And the not enoughness, like, it wasn't enough, was like, I still walked out as an adult with all of these, like, wirings and scarcity patterns and fear, because if it truly was enough, those wouldn't be there, right? And so as I'm thinking about, like, I need to reconnect to desire, I need to, like, really sit with, if this is the story I'm gonna live, what is it that is going on? Like, I need a plot twist or something to advance the plot here, because, like, one of the fears, and I know that there's other people who experience this too, where they're like, a year could go by and nothing changed. You've probably never experienced this. But there's lots of people who have, you know, like, there's lots of people who have, because it's like, in the rubber ducky phase, nothing changes.
Oh shit. That's how, like, long you be saying it?
Oh yeah. Some people live in there for their whole fucking lives, really. And so I started looking at, like, my business, my offers, and I was like, where is their life right now? Not habit, not ritual, not unconscious patterning, but like, where is something, like, really living and breathing that has a life of its own in my life? And that's what had me, like, redesign a lot of my, like, offer suite. So the program that I've built over the last 4 years is gone now. I pulled it down. The people who have been in my membership community for a while still have access to it, but only for as long as I offer it. But no one new can access it. That all of that's going away. And it was a big step, and there was a lot of, like, grief, but there was just a truth of, like, my energy dies in selling that program. My energy serving that container is exhausted, and I was burning out fast. And so I just started switching things over to, like, okay, self-paced courses. If people want to work with me, they can buy a call with me. No big deal. I wanted to focus on YouTube, and I wanted to focus on my podcast, and I wanted to do things that were just purely creative for creationary sake, because those felt exciting and enlivening to me. And as I was sitting there walking Roxy, like, just starting to think about, like, well, what is on the other side of the chasm that has me excited and alive? even if I can't necessarily see what's there, but I can feel the energy of the bridge that's being built. Let's just assume there's some fog, but I can.
Yeah. You only see like three feet.
3 feet. So I'm like, okay, how do I build the bridge? Even though I don't even know what's on the other side, I'm just going to build this. And so I kept sitting with it, The next day I take Roxy for a walk again. And we're walking. And we walk to the other side of Old Port Montreal. And we come across this building. And I'm like, man, that building is going to have such a beautiful view. And then I go home. And all of a sudden I realize that the ad that I've been getting on Instagram for the 3 weeks prior had been rent to own condos, brand new rent to own luxury condos. And I was like, rent to own? The only time I've ever seen like rent to own was my dad buying these like shitty houses as rent to own so we could have eventually like more property. So I never knew you could do it with like a luxury condo. That to me was just like, it didn't even register when I saw the ad. But I was like, wait a minute, that building is the same building? So next day I go walk again by happenstance, because every once in a while I let Roxy's nose determine where we're going to walk. She walks us all the way, of course, to this building. And so I decide I'm going to pay a little bit more attention to this building. And I walk around and I see like on the main floor, they had all of the curtains open. And I look at the main floor and I'm like, wow, that's a stunning condo. It's beautiful. And then I turn around, I do a quick 180. I'm like, ah, too bad it's a shitty view. Because on the first floor, on that side of the building, there's just warehouses.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, that sucks. Whatever. But then I walk around the building and I see like there's a gym and I can see it. I'm like, wow, that's like a really bougie gym. Main floor, like very, very bougie. I was like, okay, that's strange. I walk home. I call my mom and I was like, I'm not ready to buy by any means, but I think I want to know more about this. Like know about the process and understand it, because like that would just be interesting to know about.
And it's such a unique, like it's such a rare and unique rent to own doesn't happen too much anymore. Like it's such like if that jumps out at you, like that's like it just at least it deserves your attention.
Exactly. And so a day goes by, I get the ad again. I was like, okay, I'm just going to put in a request. They emailed me back pretty quickly. I think it was like in 24 hours or something. They asked if I wanted to come in to view it. I waited a week. There, because all of these thoughts were like, I'm not in a position to buy anything, let alone a luxury fucking condo. Like, forget about rent to own for a minute. Like, I'm not in a position where I'm going to get qualified for a mortgage for a luxury fucking condo. And so I was like, oh, I won't bother. Won't bother learning. And it was a week, like another week.
I'm grinning here.
Yeah. Like another week went by. And I was like, I could still feel this like rubber ducky. Where the fuck am I going? Like, I have nothing to be excited for. And in the midst of all of this happening, I'm like, actually, I started to accept that I'm just emotionally unavailable. And rather than trying to fix my emotional unavailability and like figure out what the fuck's wrong with me and correct it so I could be open to love, I was just like, fuck it. I'm emotionally unavailable. Like, let me be the walking red flag. It's fucking fine. I'm okay with it. Literally that week, the week that I decided I'm just going to accept that I am who I am right now. And if someone comes along and I want to shift that and practice working on my availability, I'll do it. I got asked out 4 different times. So here I am being like, okay, where the fuck am I going? Throwing my hands up, I'm like, I don't fucking care anymore. I just want somewhere to be. I want somewhere for my energy to go that's not like looping in a circle. Getting asked out. I'm actually socializing with friends again. And now there's like this apartment. I'm like, oh my God, there's life happening. Like life. Not spiritual growth, personal development, and fucking business. It's like life is happening again. So finally, I decide I'm just going to make the appointment. What's the worst that's going to happen if I just research and understand how the process works? I don't know anything. So I email her back. I was like, oh, can we do this time? Sets it up. I woke up that morning feeling excited, but like not high on my own supply, if you will. like, just like, oh, I'm excited to do this thing today. I get to this friggin' luxury condo, the lobby, not so great. It's just a lobby. Nothing spectacular, nothing fantastic. It's just a lobby. I'm like, okay. I go up to the fifth floor where their office is, and their office is actually a suite, which is genius because you can actually see how it is. And I walk in and immediately I'm like hit with this smell. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like my entire body calmed down. And I was like, that's some genius real estate planning right there. But I also noticed how clear my head felt, like super clear. And it's been a while since I felt that because like, even in this apartment, it feels like there's something on my head. In that condo, there was nothing. It was like, it felt like there's just space.
And it's real. It's real.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, interesting. Look at this condo. It's stunning. Stunning, stunning, stunning. Like the living room looked huge because of how they furnished it, which I don't care if you furnish it well and it looks huge because of that. Great. It was two bedrooms. The master bedroom had a walk-in closet and a his and hers bathroom that had a bathtub and shower separate. And then it had a full bath, like a full guest bath as well. I had like space for a laundry machine and all that stuff. And I was like, wow, this is just really beautiful. It's had it as a balcony. Obviously, the first question I ask, is this a dog-friendly building? And she goes, yeah, and there's no rate restriction. Thank fucking God. I don't know what it is with people and little dogs. Little dogs are the yappiest, most disturbing pets. Big dogs don't do shit.
Right. But the small dogs are allowed everywhere and they're annoying as fuck.
Exactly.
They're like
small rats. Dogs are always the problem. They're so bratty. And so I'm like, thank God this building gets it, obviously. And they're like, yep, no rate restrictions. And then I asked them, I was like, okay, cool. And then they're like, oh, you can have barbecue on the balcony, like little things like that. They're telling me all of these like perks of the building. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then they started telling me about the different amenities. And so they have an indoor outdoor pool. They have a chalet where you can rent and do like workshops if you want or parties or whatever. They've got a Olympic training pool. So like the ones that you swim in and you don't move. 2-story gym, a yoga studio. And a wet and dry sauna. Now, one of the things that I've said like a year ago was like, if I'm going to move again, I want to move into a better apartment that has a sauna. And I was like, okay, noted. She takes me to view a couple of the different apartments or the condo, sorry. And then also takes me to go see the amenities. And I'm like, this is beautiful. There's velvet on the walls. Like there's designs on the walls and they're all made of velvet. And like, this is wild. So now I can start to feel like all of this energy come into my body, like flood into my system. I'm like, my hands are on the countertops. The countertops are like beautiful. The light in these apartments are just stunning. She took me to the smaller unit first. And I was like, oh, I don't really love it because one of the rooms was really dark. And if I was like a photographer or an editor, like maybe that's appropriate, but like, I don't do well with that. And then the bigger suite, she goes, oh, go out onto the balcony and look right. So I go out and I look right and you can see the Montreal like clock tower. So you can see the water. Yeah. And I'm the kind of person that like, that is my ideal. Like I want to be able to see the water. Mm-hmm. If I can see water, like 20 minutes a day, I'm just a better person.
Solid.
That's why I don't do well in the winter. And I'm just like looking around. I'm like, wow, these are really stunning. This is really beautiful. And I'm aware that there is no thought or belief that's coming in that says you can't have it. Like that literal belief is not there. And I'm so aware of it. And I'm like, this is so bizarre. Like, it's almost like sitting in the omnipresent role in your life. And like being aware that there's something happening here, but like not identifying as it. It was very bizarre. So we go back to the office and she's explained to me like the pricing and how everything works. Basically, you pay the rent for a 1-year or 2-year lease. And then a percentage of that goes towards your down payment. I'm like, that's really cool. I like that. But I was like, but you have to qualify for the mortgage before you sign the lease, don't you? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, that's shitty. But at the same time, I didn't feel any panic in my system. When she told me the rental price, I was like, yeah, that is double what I pay now. But 75% of that would be going to my down payment versus 100% of it going to somebody else's pocket. And so I was like, okay. And then she goes and tells me the price. And she says, it's basically $800,000. Again, no panic, no fear, no resistance in my body whatsoever. And I was aware that it wasn't there. And I was like, okay, this is how someone feels when they are in resonance with the things that they're looking at. Like, right, this is just right. I leave the apartment. I leave the complex. I'm in the Uber. And as I'm in the Uber, I'm like, wow, like that felt so fucking cool. 3 minutes later, I'm distinctly aware that pretty much everyone in my life would shoot their shit on that. And I was like, fuck. Like, here I am finally feeling this like nugget of desire, finally feeling like there's a direction for me to go, finally feeling like, oh, there's something to work towards or be on the bridge about. And more importantly than that, I also felt this hit of like, wouldn't it be fun just to fucking play the game that maybe this year I make 800 grand in my business? Because worst case scenario, I don't make 800 grand, but I make something way more than what I am now simply because I have the desire to make. But then the contrarian fucking belief comes in of like, yeah, but I can't tell anybody about this because they're going to shit on it. Like, I knew immediately if I were to tell anyone in my family that I have a desire for an $800,000 condo, they would all say, Steph, you can buy 4 houses with that. Because that's been my whole fucking life. Like, anything that I wanted, it was like, let's find the alternative.
Right.
But it's the alternative that supports their nervous system.
Right. The cheaper and practical based on scarcity and not enoughness.
Yeah. And it hurt a little. Because I'm like, fuck. There are so many people, even in my life, whose nervous systems are so tightly wound that they can't even back someone else's expansion. And so by default, I'm already asked to debate it. Like, either to say, that's nice for you, but I want to do this thing, and then have to back my desire or defend my desire to other people. I'm like, I hate that. I hate that even with the people that I love, know, and respect, like, I feel like I have to defend the things I desire because I've never desired that much before. But in my body, I actually feel safer in desiring something that expansive than to desire something super humble. Because that is what the ducky living does. It like creates this humility that, yeah, it's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. But that also means that not only are you not expanding, but your service isn't expanding either. And I had to just be distinctly aware. Like, all of January was me looking at like my resistance to letting strangers pay me. Well, if I'm really here to serve people, I can't be worried about who's paying me. My job is to serve them. And so this like layer of like, stay quiet, stay low to the ground, it served me for a time, but now it's becoming like, something I say to my clients is like, a safety net can often become a noose. It was starting to suffocate me because I'm meant to serve so many more people in a breadth of different ways so that I can receive more and then continue serving more people. But this like ducky-esque, no direction kind of way to go became suffocating because I'm like, I don't have the energy flowing within me to serve more people. It's like my vitality's gone. And so I ended up posting online just being like, okay, I'm just going to litmus test the internet. If someone you know and loved asked you or told you that they had an $800,000 desire, how would you respond? And people responded, they're like, oh, I'd be so excited for them. And I'm like, you're all fucking liars. But then some people got really honest and they were like, immediate pangs of jealousy, immediate pangs of like, I don't know if it's that if that's possible for them or me. Like, that just sounds so outlandish. And you even replied to the post and you were like, to some people, I'd say do less drugs. And then to others being like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because you were one of the first people that I voice noted and been like, let me tell you about my day.
And I'm like, yeah.
Because I also knew that like, you've played at a level where like, that is so not a concern. Mm-hmm. You've played at a level of like extremes of like, nothing to so much that you get it versus I'm on the same path. And I even said to you on the voice note, like my autobiography is going to read from shitting in garbage bags to $1 million homes.
I love it. So I'm goosebumps right now.
Like that is just a reality for me, but I still have people in my life who see shitting in garbage bags as like a badge of honor of showing how humble and full of humility and patience and perseverance they are, because all of those carry this badge of honor.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here being like, how about no?
Right.
And it feels like confronting at a new level because, you know, even when I moved to Montreal, it was like a big thing for a lot of my family. Not just that I was moving across the country and like, should anything happen to me, no one's here. It was more so like, I'm choosing to uproot my life, which was very rural and like down to the earth, for a more luxury life.
Mm-hmm.
And that naturally brings this like almost adversary kind of conversation, when it's not meant to be.
Absolutely. And can we zoom in on this for a second? Amongst immigrants, this is very known, right? Where it's like the immigrants are always like, go to the West, go find a better life. Once you do, you betrayed them, right? Like now you feel better. Look at you on your fucking high horse. Now you feel like, oh, little Missy, you went all around the world. And everyone that's East Europe, Mexico, like I've had this conversation with everyone. And there's this like enemy kind of thing also amongst like rural or some version of a small town versus bigger life, but not with the moral added, not bigger life is better. It's just a pathway. It's a different direction. Cause you and I both, this is something we talked about in voice note that we were going to talk about today. Like everybody wants homestead life, but do you have fucking homestead money? You want ranch life. Do you have ranch money? Cause redneck rich is a thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's so, but there's definitely this virtue of look how much I can overcome, how much hardship I can hold while wanting so little in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's such a thing. And then if you just want more, right?
Even a little bit more.
No, just a little. We're not talking you're going to bigger cities, bigger countries, bigger money. Just you, sis. For us wanting, like, I always, like, we, on the fucking family farm, we have cars from the last four generations, none of them working, right? And the fact that I said, I want a new car, like, calm down, little Missy.
Oh my God, yeah, I grew up with, the joke that I would tell people is that my family's so redneck that we have 7.5 cars and only 2.5 run.
Sis, so true, same.
And the thing is like, I remember my cousin bought a brand new car and everyone was like whispering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, that's $700 a month payment. And like, forget when you actually start talking to these like financial gurus and they're like, don't buy money on a car. That's a depreciating asset. And it's like, so is fucking life. And it's got so much morality in the judgment of it because there is morality in the backing of the harder life. I remember when I first moved back home to my childhood home during the pandemic, because I was like, fuck that. I'm not paying rent to live in Vancouver when I'm not allowed to leave my apartment.
Word.
Not happening. So I moved back to my childhood home and it was really fucking hard. Not the fact that like, oh, I have to haul water and oh, I have to chop wood. Like that wasn't necessarily the hard part. The hard part was the wanting of the running water up against the conditioning of you can be without, Yeah, I can be without. Don't get me wrong. I can do it. I have done it. I don't want to do it again. And I remember there was this one time, you know, prior to like me and my dad have really shifted our relationship since. But prior to that shift, there was a moment where me and him were like screaming at each other. I was full on psycho banshee. Because I was like, I'm just asking you to set up the pump. So I did have a well on this property, but it had like a rusted cauldron, not cauldron, cauldron. There's a word. I can't pronounce it right now. Culvert. Okay. Something. It was rusted out. So the water inside was like blood red. But if we put a pump on, at least there'd be running water. Even if it was blood red, I could wash my hands.
Sure. Sure.
Like, I'm not upset that there's iron on my hands. I'm upset that like, I can't wash my hands after I go to the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah. My hands will be dirty with iron, but like, I prefer that. There's just something.
It's a different. There's a different dirty between like virus carrying and versus like, yeah, no, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I asked my dad, I was like, I bought a pump. Can you please hook it up? And he was like, it's going to ruin the pump. I was like, I'm aware of that. I know it's going to ruin the pump, but like, I need to be able to wash my hands. Like, this is the one thing I'm asking for. And the screaming match began. Just full on. If it was good enough for your aunts and your mom, it can be good enough for you. And like all of this stuff. And I was like, I'm asking you to wash my fucking hands. Like, it was literally this battle between this pioneering mindset, which I don't think in North America we talk enough about, because pioneers have the same mentality as immigrants. It's just taken 9 years to make it worse. Because it's taken generations upon generations of pride in that pioneer mindset. And so I'm sitting there screaming. And at one point I burst out into tears. Cause like, I can't handle it anymore. I'm like, why is it pulling teeth to ask for the bare fucking minimum in my life? Cause again, I didn't ask for a lot growing up. I started working at 15 because I was like, let me get it myself.
Well, and additional to that, when the bare, so the problem with these set points are that they're, even though we use the word set points, they're always moving. So if you're moving your set points towards bigger, they're going to grow bigger. If you have stagnant, and I'm using air quotes here, they're going to grow smaller. So the minimum is going to become the bare minimum is going to be then, and the bare minimum is going to be then too, still too much. Like, it's moving towards less and less, which is the problem then.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And so after that blow up, he ended up like very resentfully hooking up the pipe, the pump. The pump obviously broke because at some point it kept running when it needed to turn off and I didn't unplug it. My fault, whatever. It's my money. I will pay for every mistake I make. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But obviously when it broke, my dad was like, see, now you got to go waste your money again. And I'm like, yeah, but it's my money to waste. Mm-hmm. And so it just kept being this like push and pull around saving money was prioritized over like decent living. And you and I both are like, if there's something that makes my life easier, I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to figure out how to come up with the money to pay for it.
Right. Because it's the ROI is big, right? And the ROI, and I feel like the people who live in, and ironically, and I, this is currently a conversation in the survivalist and prepper world too, where they're all pumping money towards saving and like preparating. And I'm like, y'all live a miserable life right now. So you just want to survive so you can be longer miserable? Like, that sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Like, so you just want to simply survive the apocalypse to be longer miserable?
Yeah, that's what they want.
And I'm just confused. Well, I don't know why it's a choice.
Like, it's one of those things of like, if you're going to live forever, I actually had this question. I was watching, I think I was watching Supernatural or something. And it was like, would you choose to live forever, but die every day?
Oh, shit.
Or would you prefer to stay young forever and die once?
Okay, I have many questions. How young?
Whatever age you are now.
Oh, okay. I'm staying young and die once.
And die once. So yeah. The question just started like percolating in terms of there's all these people who are aging because they're going through stress, turmoil, pain, suffering, struggle, so they can live longer, die once.
See, it makes no fucking sense to me.
Right. And so I remember, so with my dad, like I said, we and him have radically shifted our relationship, and it took a lot of work on my side to like really just see him as a man with his own like flaws, not just dad. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for that shift. It's really transformed a lot. And simultaneously, it shifted his relationship to resources as well, to a certain extent, which has been very important, because he realized that like my dad's been self-employed for fucking 15, 20 years. The rate that he gives people keeps him at minimum wage.
And you're like, Dad, that's not why you're self-employed.
Exactly. But because of all of these indoctrinations of like, well, it's admirable to like give your client a deal. It's like, yeah, but it's also important that you fucking eat food that's not from Walmart.
Right. Because if, and these clients cannot enjoy or benefit from the service you're providing if you are shit.
Yeah. And so like, thank God in the last 2 years, he's totally changed his rates. And I'm so proud of him for that. But it's like, I had a conversation with him a while ago where I was like, Dad, I understand that you think, basically how it went was, I'm still renovating my property in BC. And I sent him a photo of like what I ultimately want the house to look like. So it's like black siding, red fir trim. And then I just added, I was like, but I want white doors and white windows, because that's what I paid for. Like, that's what I got. And his reply was, yeah, that's no problem. But fur ain't cheap. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, it just activated this young part of me. That was like, fuck, you're asking for too much again. And so I just replied, I was like, baby steps, Dad. Because like, that's just true. Like, we're not really at the stage of like getting on this fur siding yet by any means. But for like 48 hours, I was spinning out about this fur ain't cheap. And I was like, what the fuck is that about? Like, why am I so looming on that? And what I realized was that my dad grew up in a household where deprivation was a form of motivation. My dad was literally like the redheaded stepchild, shitty upbringing, fucking shit circumstance, left, right, and center. Going without was his motivator. I'm not motivated by that.
Word.
Mm-hmm. I'm motivated by desire.
By towards pleasure. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so if you just look at the foundation, like if me and my dad were sitting on the side of a chasm, his wiring, no matter how dysfunctional it is, his wiring is, I don't have a bridge. How do I make a bridge with the littlest amount of resources? Versus mine is, I don't have a bridge, but I want to be over there.
And again, quickly pausing on this, because people either move away from fear or move towards pleasure. The best is a combination of both, but most people have to learn that. But yeah, it's extremely important to start exploring. And I'm obviously talking to the listeners, not to you right now, to like, yeah, what their motivation is. Are you moving away from fear? And I would argue, and I would like to hear your personal opinion on this. So I think that most people think it sounds cool to want to move towards pleasure, but evidently the whole society shows that we're not a society. Like, we're avoidance of pain perhaps at its best, but you can tell, like, if I tell you right now, you'll get $1 million if you come to the top of that mountain tomorrow. There's nothing else. You just have to walk and pick it up. Majority of the people would still be, oh, I don't really feel like it, or I don't think I can walk the mountain. Right? However, if they have the landlord banging on the door, oh, I think I have to get into movement. Most people move away from fear.
Yeah, they use it as the force that gets them moving.
Yeah.
Rather than the goal the thing that they're being pulled from, right? So like that's kind of what I'm pointing to with my dad. Like he'll, like limitation pushes him.
Yeah.
It's like, get fucking moving, guy. Even if it's painful, because limitation is inherently painful, right? Versus me, possibility will pull me. Yeah. I don't need to be pushed.
Open.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, okay, possibility, fuck it, I'll run for it.
Right.
I don't need demotivation or deprivation to motivate me.
Right.
And so I had to call him. It was like 48 hours later, I called him. I was like, Dad, I need to tell you about my crazy. And he's like, oh no.
Bless him.
We developed this thing where I'm like, Dad, I've been thinking about something. And he goes, I wish you wouldn't. Is every time. But I called him and I was like, listen, I know this wasn't your intention. Like, I know you love me. You want to see me successful. And I'm also aware that how you motivate is because that's how you're motivated. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't motivate me. If anything, it demotivates me. He's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, you know, even in saying fur ain't cheap, that's not an obstacle I actually need to be made aware of because it's obvious.
Right. Nor is it an obstacle.
It's not really an obstacle because the way that I relate to it, it's like, oh, that's just something to be responsible for.
Right.
Right.
And again, to call in more to it's again, we'll make it happen.
I'll make it happen. I don't know how I'm going to make it happen, but I'll make it happen. Like the how is really not my business. And I was like, I need you to talk to me as if you already know that I'm a multimillionaire.
Solid. Also compliments on expressing the desire of how you need to want to be met.
It was a very fascinating conversation because then he was like, you know, Steph, I do see you as like successful. Like you're more successful than, you know, me and your mom could have imagined. Like you're doing so much. I was like, I understand that, but there's ways that when you talk to me, I can feel where you don't quite believe it. And it seeps in these ways where it kind of feels like a jab or a barb of like, oh, you got to do this. Like even I remember when I had my first six-figure year, I told him about it and he's like, great, make two next year. Which isn't, again, that's can be motivating for other people, but it's demotivating for me because I need celebration.
Right.
That keeps me open to possibility. That keeps me excited and being like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
More of that, please.
Yeah.
Because I can't celebrate the same thing twice. So of course I'm going to try to aim for two.
Yeah.
But not because I didn't get the celebration. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's regardless of what you think of Melanie Ann Lair, she had a similar situation with her mom where she had made her first, I think it was her 8 mil year, which is like, again, these numbers are like, no one really bats an eye. Like it's normalized in certain industries, right? Mm-hmm. And so she expressed it to her mom and her mom was like, sure you have, sweetie. Like just not believing it. And she's like, I have it in my bank account. Like, my bank account. There's sure you did, sweetie.
Yeah. And there's something, maybe it's a generation. I don't know what it is, but like.
Sure, absolutely too. Cause there, no one, our parents did not live in the generation where there was no financial ceiling.
No, there's limits everywhere.
Right. Cause brick and mortar in the end only has a very, very defined ceiling.
It does for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the conversation with my dad, though, what I loved about it was he just got really honest with me. He goes, Steph, I'm going to try, but I can't say I know how to.
We're off the best response.
And I got really emotional and I was like, you're already doing it. Like that was the response I needed. Just like for him to hear me, for him to acknowledge like, fuck. Like, right. My dad had like the shittiest fucking upbringing. And it's so funny because when I was 16, me and him got into a fight and I was like, I'll never feel sorry for you. And then now I'm like, oh my God, this poor man.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's like, you grow up, you get smarter.
You matured.
And it was just this awareness that like, my dad never had anyone fully back him. Mm-hmm. The only people around him either shat on his dreams, told him he couldn't have it, or demanded he prove himself for it. Mm-hmm. And so there is also a truth that I'm inherently confronting to the wiring that my dad got, like who I am as a person, how I'm wired is inherently confronting to how he has been wired. Cause I'm a firm believer that I don't think we're naturally like that. I think it gets either we're indoctrinated into scarcity and we're indoctrinated into limitation. If you look at Gen X, you look at boomers, I think that's pretty natural. And then you have to maintain integrity to the possibility you had when you were three and though everything was possible. For me, I did this like little loop around where I bought into all the scarcity limitations and like, I need to strategize my way through life. And then something clicked where I was like, I'm done with that. It's not fruitful. It doesn't help me. It's no longer useful. And then I went back to like that three-year-old possibility of like, anything's possible. So how do I make it possible in the real world?
Word.
But my dad's generation, my mom's generation, they didn't have that. Contentment, being fine, was the goal.
Was our bliss.
Yeah.
The goalpost moved.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And so then the challenge becomes, how do I keep going on my path while being aware that it's inherently confronting to those who still have a goalpost that's significantly further behind me? You know? And so an $800,000 condo would fucking blow the shit out of my dad. I did tell my mom the other day, but she only laughs at like five things. She's going through it. Right. And I told her, I was like, Mom, I actually need you to be excited for me, because this whole, I always know you're going to do well, actually isn't it. It's also not a motivator. It's like taking my efforts for granted versus being like, I'm so proud of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the thing that I've wanted my whole life, is someone to be like, you're doing so fucking good. Like, mm-hmm. way to go, Steph.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. so it didn't feel like the journey of growth was so lonely, that I was really seen in what I was doing. And in the last like handful of years, it like really hasn't been like that either. So even doing masterminds and coaching and working with other people, like I still wasn't getting like that way to fucking go, Steph.
Mm.
I see you. I see what you're doing. I see what you're moving through. And self-motivation, I don't think is really the most sustainable fuel. And so I've just gotten a little bit more discerning about like who I talk to about my dreams, my desires, my aspirations, because I'm like, wow, desire is so fragile. Even if it's insane, even if it's not practical, even if it's illogical, it's like, it's so fragile because all of the wounding and the patterning is like, you can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to shit on it.
Mm-hmm. Until it becomes a norm, and then you get that new level. Until it becomes a norm, and then you have to grow into it. It's the same. The set points grow for everything, including the desire, the size of the desire.
Yeah. And then it's cyclical because this feeling happens over and over and over and over again at every new fucking goalpost.
Yeah. And you're like, what kind of rip? Can I speak to the manager, please? Because what kind of rip off is that? I had this fucking cycle at my last mill. Why do I have it at 10 mil?
Yeah.
I thought I solved this. Kind of rip off. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't solve it. I don't think. I'll let you know once I'm at 10 mil, but like.
Well, you and I talked about one of my friends who is in the 7, 8, 9 figures, and, you know, external factors happened and he got really freaked out. And he plays at a level of numbers that you and I can dream of for our whole life, probably, right? And I'm just using this with a wink, not as a limitation.
No.
And it's the same. I've been, how do I keep it like semi-anonymous? I've been talking to this VP, right? And he's throwing around 40 mil, 200 mil, right? And I'm like, yeah. Like, oh, you're throwing around like I'm throwing around like 2000, right? Not realizing, and then knowing that obviously my 2,000 is someone else's fucking 4,200 mil. Like, right? But I'm like, oh my God. And he sounded with the same scarcity because there was like turbulence going on. And again, 40 to 200 mil. And I'm like, oh shit, it never fucking ends. And I'm gonna keep it honest with you. They're still like, I'm gonna do the work, but I'm still hoping someday that I'll still like, I reach the level of that cycle. I don't have to deal with this cycle anymore.
I've always known that the cycles were there because that's my background, like being a financial controller, being an accountant, bookkeeper.
Right.
Gotcha. I've always seen it. The difference is that there was this skill that when people hit this point, that they could navigate it with such grace. And I think that's my commitment. And the reason why tethering my parents in is so important to me and why it does come up at every new up level, because I'm like, I never want to be that person that becomes too rich to remember her beginnings. I never want to be that person. I don't love interacting with those kinds of people because they act like where they came from was the hindrance when actually it was like the opportunity. There's no one in the world that can do what I do because they never shat on a fucking garbage can full of like garbage bag, you know, like there are just facts that what I teach is unique because of where I came from.
Right.
And so I don't want to go through my up levels and then abandon my roots because I'm at this new up level and that my family is not there.
Right. And I feel like it gets misconstrued from the outside where people misunderstand that your first of all, your level of desire has expanded, grown, and changed. And also you're having this of what you're willing to like put up with, and your standards have changed. Not that that doesn't become a moral, I fucking shit on this. No, it's just like, I don't see the necessity of having to live that way anymore.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I don't see the necessity of having to struggle. I even remember I went to my uncle's house and I was like, when do we stop having to be patient? And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, everyone keeps telling me that to get running water in this house, I got to be patient.
Oh, shit. I was like, bringing the real questions.
Yeah, I was like, I could be patient for the rest of my fucking life. Mm-hmm. How long is patience enough?
And what is this patience based upon? Can you tell me the factors that contributes to this formula of the patience? Is it we're saving up money? The season isn't right. I don't have the labor. Like, what are we doing? What is this patience build upon?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, there are some like actual factors, right? Like, for whatever reason, nobody wants to be paid cash under table anymore, which is like fucking mind blowing to me. When you offer to pay them in like actual well fucking meaning salary that they're not going to get anywhere else, they won't show up for work. Like I'm straight up, when people say there's a labor shortage, when you offer like a very generous compensation, they're still not showing up. So don't tell me it's the pay.
No, it's not the fucking pay. We have work. This is the thing. We have a work etiquette problem.
Yes.
Culturally. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so there are some things that like naturally I do have to be like, I have to be patient with the fact that we don't have enough labor to get the well set up, or we don't have enough labor to get the siding on. And it's just my dad doing it solo right now because the people he hires, they're actually just not dependable. But we can't find dependable people. So like, yeah,
that's a clear answer, right? Like, okay, absolutely. You have to, like the patience is there's lack of people who do the labor. So it depends on us.
Absolutely. So like, that's where it's okay. I accept that this project cannot move forward because we have a limitation that is beyond our control. Absolutely.
Word.
But when it's asked to be patient, it's never about the progress of a project. It's about being patient with your continuance of suffering.
Take me to church, I worship like
the stars. Is it not? When someone says, just be patient, they're really asking, suffer a little bit more.
There's a whole thing in the language, for one, which we culturally get wrong, is where there is having patience implies something like having discipline, and neither, or having willpower, neither of these things exist. They are an active participation of doing something. Discipline, mm-hmm. consistency, integrity, right? You don't have integrity. You are integrity. You do discipline. You do patience.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have these like fallacies in language where we say like, yeah, but you have to have patience. It directly implies that having patience should feel like this calmness or like the serenity on the inside, because you know, no. You do patience because you have done your steps on your end of what you can do to progress this thing. And then you have to do something else. So the doing patience on this end of life can continue doing patience. And then you do something else.
Yeah.
But it's not passively waiting, which a lot of people use it like, yeah, you have to have more patience. Wait. And in this case, very specifically, yeah, you just hold your suffering a little longer.
Right.
Well, I don't think I don't think that's necessary, because yeah. I don't accept this as an answer.
Exactly. So, case in point, I moved to Montreal. Why? Because I want to be able to have a fucking bath. I want to be able to wash my hair. I want to be able to do this. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with the hardcore rule of living if that's for you. But my business got bigger. My profit margins increased when I actually went in alignment with what I needed. Now, am I still being patient with the progress on that house? Yeah.
Exactly. You're still doing the patience.
I'm still doing the patience because there's nothing I can do about the labor. Like, shy of paying a general laborer $100 an hour, they're not showing up consistently to get a job done. So I have to be patient until I can find somebody who just wants to get it fucking done. And I'm really hoping that my loan shark days are coming up, where like the people who owe me money will just fucking do it. But I'm not, patience hasn't stopped. There has been a like, we need to get this done. Figure it the fuck out now, because it's waited too long and we can't move on other projects with that property until these baby things are done. Mm-hmm. For example, like we needed to redo the siding on the cottage. Because I'm paying like $3,500 a year on insurance. And people are like, well, just don't insure the house. I'm like, no, that would be out of integrity for me. Mm-hmm. I understand you don't see that as a necessary expense. So why is it that the things you don't see necessary are things I must do? And the things that I don't see necessary, you still demand I do. What is that about? You don't believe in house insurance, but you believe in suffering. Therefore, I have to abide by that.
Right. Are we? Did everyone do a bad batch of crack?
Truly, probably. So when I asked my uncle that, that was like the beginning of the tires turning, where I was like, oh, there is a generational inheritance that I've gotten. And the beautiful thing about inheritance, both spiritually and legally, you can deny and reject it, which is the most important thing I have ever discovered. And so I've really had to sit with, like, what am I rejecting that I've inherited? You don't have to reject it all. And in fact, I would never suggest someone rejects everything they inherited, even if it was shitty. But I actually reject the need to be patient at the stalling of the rest of my life.
Word.
And that's why when I hit this fucking rubber ducky again, I was like, oh, no.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not going to fly.
This is a self-awareness, because you have been the rubber ducky previously. So you have data like, oh, it took me this long. And I hate that I refer to Hormozy so much, but he words things just very well. But he speaks to this like, the reason why I'm successful, him speaking, and this goes for all of us, by the way, every one of us, coaches, whatever people, career people who got successful, is because we try to shorten the ducky face. If we know, if I know I'm procrastinating this thing, or I'm seeing this, I'm observing this thing, and I'm in it for a month, and I know that the next thing, whatever that is, whether it's a hard thing or, you know, something you don't know yet, you have to do, like a normie would take 6 months, would go through the movement, and you're like, okay, but if I know for myself that I'm going to end up doing that thing, why not shorten the span, do it today, this week, or this month? So now I'm 6 months ahead of the rest of the people already, because they're still rubber. They're fine with rubber ducking for 6 months. I'm just fine with it for a month.
This is so great. So I don't know if I told you, but I'm training in rapid release therapy right now with Dr. John Connolly. I haven't fully like wrapped my head around all of the concepts, but there is this one teaching and perspective that I really fucking love. And it's, is it good to do and possible, or no, is it possible to do and good to have done? That is actually the only cause of motivation, because if it's possible to do, there's no reasonable thing that's going to get in the way. And if it was good to have done, you're focused on the having done it, not in the doing. Mm-hmm. Right? So
that's the epitome of time travel. Exactly. That's literally time traveling.
That's it. And so when we're sitting in this like ducky phase and we're like, listen, I know eventually this ducky phase is going to end. But there's patterns of behaviors that can keep that going longer than needed. Like I said, the ducky phase has a time and a place, but it also has an expiration date.
Absolutely.
Our human side that likes to cycle around drama and pain and struggle, because that's where our wiring is. Just like, I'm really good at staying past the peak. I worked 10 years on a degree that I knew I was never going to finish. I dropped out with 2 classes left. Fucking duckied there too, you know? And so is it possible to do? Is it good to have done? I could have applied that to my degree back in the day, but it's like, you've got to find interest and appeal in it. Mm-hmm. I never had interest and appeal in graduating because my career was taking off. That's where the interest and appeal was. So I was, once I finally adjusted for that, I let go of my degree, because that was keeping me in this fucking pond instead of actually going somewhere. And I think one of the things for me too is like, I kind of look at the world like a map, mm-hmm. like an old school, like treasure map, pirates. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I was a pirate in the last life.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I like the booty.
I accept.
Yeah. So I see it as like this map. And so if you find out where you are on the map, you can go in any direction. But it's like, are you actually willing to leave where you are on the map? I'm aware that where I was on the map, I was like, I'm sitting in a spot that I could die in. Like I could die there and that it would be fine. Life would be good.
Okay.
But I don't have access to possibility or ambition or desire to pull me somewhere else, because it's not even about the fucking desire. It's the desire is the vehicle. So this $800,000 condo, it's not about me finally signing the degree, like the $800,000 condo. It's about the energy, the presentation and exposure to that desire gives me to carry me forward. That's it.
And that's where the weight is of most people, where there is a holding to being able to hold that big desire, because with big desires come bigger disappointments and knowing that you'll be fine. And my personal phrase is like, look, if you're rubber duckying, and I'm just using this analogy constantly, is that, and you step out of rubber ducky, the good news is you can always go back to rubber ducky. Like rubber ducky pond is always available.
Oh,
like that will never go anymore. And that's even for people, like when people really live in shitty circumstance and they're like scared to do, I'm like, your shitty circumstance will always be available. You can always go back to them. Like they will not.
I just did a free masterclass called Clean Money, Filthy Rich. And we talked about this, where I was like, what scares you about making $10,000? Everyone, that I'll lose it. I was like, but you're already not making it.
What? And I'm using it always like when people are like miserable and like a miserable job, and they, because that's usually career stuff, people that come to me, they're like, you know, but I'm afraid to apply for a new thing. I'm like, but shitty job, just like you can always find shitty jobs. Like they're a galore. Like you don't have to like do effort. You'll have to do effort for the good job, but the shitty jobs will be, like, you can always go back to that.
Yep.
And that's in the holding, right? Well, you have moved away from the pond, like from your old self. The new self hasn't revealed itself yet. So you're kind of in this like in between. And this is why us extremists, which is also directly a translation as us successful people, it's not in the doing, because everyone can do the doing. You know, people work their ass off everywhere. That's not the thing. Right. So the just doing the labor, that's not the hard thing. It's, can you hold the fucking void where the evidence hasn't shown? You don't even know if the evidence exists. It might not. Can you hold that?
Yeah. I've been on this kick. Actually, I was talking to a girlfriend this morning. We created a WhatsApp group called Keeping the Lights On. And all we're doing is like, here's all the cool things that have happened or are happening that keep the lights on. Because when you're in that void, you can't go back, because the pond gets more enticing. It's like, oh, but things could be safer over there. Things could be more content. Things are stable. Like me going back to my childhood home is forever my safety net. My mom lives in the house that I'm renovating. She's choosing to struggle because, I mean, her limitations are there. But, you know, she's got a roof over her head. My dad would be my neighbor. Like, it's not the most idyllic life for me,
but it's there, it's available.
It's available. So at any point in time, like there's even moments where I have to catch myself if I'm really in a down of like, oh, should I go back to BC? And then it's like, BC will always be there. It will always be there. I've developed enough certainty myself that there's certain things like I will always be fine. But I haven't yet got to experience where I'm doing significantly better than fine. That's the game I want to play. I want to play that when I wake up in the morning, I have a delicious meal, and then I take my dog for a walk, and I go for my lattes, I serve my clients, and I'm getting more and more high caliber clients, and that they're excited to work with me, and I'm excited to work with them, and that I'm getting invited to podcasts, and I'm getting invited to like TV shows, and I'm writing a book, and the book sells, and like people are starting to have demoralistic programming conversations around wealth and resources. And all of a sudden, because we're not using morality as this way of being good or bad, we just start operating with values of integrity. All of a sudden the world starts to shift. Like that's the world that I want to live in. And that's the desire. That is the $800,000 desire. Mm-hmm. That woman is the one who has a luxury home, not the woman who goes back to the fucking pond.
No. Also, three feet from gold. It's a classic, but it remains the one. Can you imagine? You're pushing. You know the three feet from gold story, right?
Oh, is that like that cartoon where the guy like turns around after he's been mining?
Yeah.
The like diamond mine or whatever.
It's 3 feet from the gold. And he went back, and gave up.
Yeah.
No. Just no. Also,
there's a part of me that just like wants to experience that first crack where the diamonds start pouring out. That's the moment I want.
Well, yeah, that's the drive, or that's part of it. Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in order for that potential crack to happen, you'll have to keep cracking at it.
Yeah.
Otherwise there's absolutely not going to be a crack.
Yeah.
And there's this I have my bratty moments where I'm like, what you mean? Why am I not a billionaire yet? And I have it when I go to the gym too. I'm like, why don't I have abs yet?
Cause and effect. Why don't you have abs yet?
Well, I will never have abs. I had like the way my hips are. I remember when I was anorexic, like in my puberty, and I was like a professional gymnast, and I still like I just had big hips, and there's like that's not my body. But again, so there's this thing like you and. With me, we always hold pity parties where we're like, I did all the work for a whole week and I'm still not a billionaire. Oh. And everyone's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I know. And then we continue still doing the work.
Yeah.
Because again, like, where the love and gaslight communities all like, oh no, you just have to, no. We acknowledge the pity party. And we
keep going. Yeah. I think one of the things too is that I've had to really work on is like, I've never actually allowed myself to feel disappointed.
Oh shit, say more.
A girlfriend actually called me out on this the other day, like 2 weeks ago. Oh. She goes, you got to call it what it is.
Oh, snap.
And I fuck it. Like, I couldn't even say the sentence. Like, that's how wired of self-preservation I've had. Don't admit you're devastated. Don't admit that you're heartbroken. Don't admit that you're disappointed.
So what's your go-to mechanism?
Disassociation.
Oh, I see. Mine was gaslighting. Like it's good for like a better thing will come along. It'll be good for something.
I wish I had that because that's so.
I wish I had the dissociation.
Well, I feel like that coping mechanism keeps you oriented to desire because it's like, okay, it's this or something better. This didn't come, so something better is. I've started shifting to that one, but the disassociation, it kind of goes back to what we were saying. The goalposts start to shrink.
Yes. But the thing is with coping mechanisms that they're not a drive and they're not belief systems. Because if you had it as a belief system, you wouldn't need a coping mechanism. Then there's a very calm, belief systems have an actual full acceptance in them. Like if I would legit believe that it will be this or something better, I wouldn't need to tell myself or mental gymnastic myself that something better will come along because I could just fully accept. Like yeah. it's not even a thing. There's full acceptance, but a coping mechanism does mental gymnastics.
Fair enough. My disassociation, for the most part, I don't even know if it was a belief or coping mechanism because it was just so subconscious. Gotcha. Like I remember in high school, I was poached from volleyball. Well, I wasn't really poached. Like I stopped playing volleyball competitively. And in my senior year, the coach brought me on to the soccer team because that was how he picked his goalies. Because volleyball players have a vertical. They're like willing to jump for pretty much anything. And so he brought me on as a goalie. I had never played goalie before, but it was my senior year. And that was the year that we were going to Hawaii. So every 2 years, you were either going to Hawaii as a senior or you were going as a junior. I was in my senior year, super excited, going to Hawaii. He calls me into his office. He goes, hey, so you're going to go to Hawaii next year. And I was like, what?
No.
And he was like, and he's like, yeah. And I was like, no, I'm graduating this year. And he's like, what? And I remember his face was like, but you hang out with younger people because I went to elementary school with a lot of the girls that I hung out with, but they were all like a year or two younger than me.
Gotcha.
And so once we hit high school, it was like, oh, we're just like friends again, you know, hanging out.
Gotcha.
And
I was like, sure.
No, I'm a senior. I'm graduating. And there was this moment because I had to choose between soccer, going to Hawaii, or being the queen of hearts in Alice in Wonderland.
Off with the head.
Off with the head. And so I was in this moment of like, I turned down that role to go to Hawaii and now Hawaii is gone. I didn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Like, I don't think I really ever felt the disappointment. And then even when it came to like love and relationships, I think the first time I really let myself feel disappointment was probably like 3 or 4 years ago, where it was like, I finally let someone in. And within like a 72-hour period, he went from like introducing me to his mom to wanting nothing to do with me. And I was like really disorienting. Mm-hmm. That was probably one of the only other times I ever felt disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Like truly felt my disappointment. It's one thing to say you're disappointed, but like to really feel the gravity
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely.
And I think that also goes back to this like expectation of, oh, it's because I want too much.
Well, that's going to be the inner dialogue. Yeah.
Right? Better off to not want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the subconscious mind goes and collects that opportunity for disappointment as evidence to not want for anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And I believe that currently our biggest problem in the world, across countries and nations, that men's biggest problem is that that they can't regulate their nervous system from rejection, and women can't regulate their nervous system from disappointment.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense as to why disassociation would be the response too, from like a primal physiological level. But that also means like for the people who like go into fight or flight, like the people who go fight, they go full on crazy instead of just being disappointed.
So I used to say that I was a raging person. I used to always say my base emotion is rage. And I would even joke, there's like, coming from where I come from, coming from criminal circuits, there's a status to being able to like targeted rage. Like there's a thing to it. And in hindsight, now I'm like, oh, I was sad or disappointed. But rage is significantly easier because it's outward and it has a goal, right? So going berserk is significantly easier than being with your sadness, disappointment, hurt, whatever it is.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, at some point in my life, I was known as having like quite a sharp tongue. Mm-hmm. And that was actually just like a way of relieving whatever experience I was having internally. But something happened probably like my late teens, early 20s, where I stopped doing that. So it's been something that's been up for me very recently, where I actually don't feel like I'm a very good public speaker anymore. I feel like my tongue is super thick. I stutter, I stammer, I pause way too much. Like there's a lot of criticism right now around my public speaking, because at some point I went from being sharp tongue, quick wit, on my toes. Like my parents used to joke around, like you basically have to be a genius to talk to Steph because she's just that quick. To now, I'm like, where did she go?
You're just ahead of the curve. It's something else. It's because you advocate for nuance, and nuance does not have a sharp tongue, because nuance is constantly doing this.
Sure, but I was 17. 17-year-olds don't really get nuance all that much. But like the skill,
you can have it naturally in you. That's not when, but like the sharpness of the tongue disappearing.
That I'm fine with, but I think it was more so like I was the kind of person who, when I spoke with conviction.
Mm.
And now I can feel like that part of me, something happened to her.
But like right now?
Even, like it's been up for the last like 3 weeks. I did a live stream.
Well, yeah, but because you just let go of your old self. You let go of the pond. Oh, you don't have a new self yet. So of course there's no conviction, because you don't know what the new operating system is.
Okay, so let's use that for an example. In the pond, you have no conviction, because I literally have felt this way whilst in that pond.
Sure.
For quite some time.
Sure.
So that's where I'm at right now. But like it is exciting, because I'm turning towards like, let's just fucking create shit. Like let's play a game with myself of what if I did just create this like crazy successful business? Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be fun to like create a multi six figure profitable company? Because I'm really fucking tired of coaches talking about their six figure years, but they have no fucking profits.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to create that. In fact, I was walking the other day and I was like, okay, so there's this mastermind that's been brewing. You know about it. I sent you a photo. There's this mastermind where it's like, it's for business, like women in business, whether you're a fashion designer, graphic designer, a coach, doesn't really matter, but you're self-employed. And I was sitting with it. I was like, this is for those who actually want a profitable life.
Word.
Like, I'm not interested in you making a lot of money just to spend a lot of money. I'm not interested in you cultivating a lot of energy just to waste a lot of energy, or freeing up your time just to waste your time. Like, what if we actually brought in some deliberacy into these like femininely led spaces? Like precision and like specificity, the deliberacy, like that's the word of if I'm going to fuck around and find out, you know that when I'm fucking around, it's on purpose.
Word. Right.
And like, that's, yeah, like that's the game that I want to play. And part of it is like acknowledging within myself, what happens when I don't? And what I don't has been like, I can create a six-figure business, but like, there's no vitality in it. I don't feel alive running it. Mm-hmm. I want to feel alive. I want my life to feel profitable. And that is a much more holistic approach. Oh. And that feels exciting to me.
I love it.
Yeah.
Hell yes. And with that, you know, let's end on this high.
Yeah, let's do that.
So it is. So it shall be. I can't fucking wait.
Yeah. I'll keep you in the loop.
Yeah. We'll put all the links. Everyone, this was Fearless Wealth. My amazing fellow money person. Shat in a poopy bag. Gonna have $1 million crib. And there's gonna be a YouTube video. Welcome to my crib.
Oh my God, you know what? Mark my words that the day that happens, we're going to take little clips of me like on interviews talking about like, I shat in a garbage bag. It's going to be a montage of me and all these different podcast episodes. And then it just be like, now welcome to my $100 million home, like my $1 million home. Let's just
tell you. So it is.
So it is.
Okay. Peace. Thank you so much, girl. I'll shut it. Talk soon.
Wait. Were you almost hanging up, leaving us, leaving me and everyone in this podcast without liking, subscribing, and putting on that bell notification? Nah, that's not cool. Come on, do it. And if you're feeling extra feisty today, share, tag me, and tell me what you like the most about the episode. Let's hear it in the comments. Let's hear it on all the platforms. I'll see you in the next episode.